5 o'clock on Friday.
Oh, yeah.
Woo, what a week, huh? Congratulations, we did it.
Thank God.
Happy, happy hour, and you are listening to WHPC 90.3 FM. It is time for American Hit Radio. I'm your host, Tom Ryan. Heidi Morales, Ryan.
The super happy hour.
Lovely wife and co-host with me as well. Thank goodness. Keep me on point here, Heidi. My brain is exploding today. This is a long day for me, so I'm happy to be here on the radio and pick up where we left off. Of course, on Fridays, the theme of the show is how music changed. The specific theme that we've been covering now for the better part of a year, literally, is the Rolling Stones. This is part 28. That's how I know it's the better part of a year. And with this show, we come to yet another major turning point in the history of the bands. We are in the history of the band, the Rolling Stones. We are at the point where we are going to be able to cover the entire album Exile on Main Street. Up after this, we are going to be able to pick and choose our way through the songs a little bit more quickly. I don't think I need to cover every song on every album going forward. This is, in some ways, the last of the classic run that the Rolling Stones had. Things begin to change after this, to some extent. But, compared to the way the band usually worked, though, the sessions for this album were a complete mess. They were recording in the basement of an old chateau
right.
that Keith Richards was living in. They had to use one of the first portable recording rigs that were ever made, and it was parked outside in the driveway while the band set up in various rooms in the basement trying to get different sounds.
They were all over the place in that house.
Right. The house was constantly overflowing with outsiders and hangers-on and people coming and going, drug dealers coming and going, friends coming and going. Well, the actual, band members only showed up when it was convenient. They had no material. They didn't have anything pre-written. So they were sort of hoping for inspiration whenever
right.
they did get together that they could make it up as they went along. And, worst of all, since Keith was the one who was living in the house, he became the ringleader and the organizer. But he was in no real great condition to do it because he had this ruthlessly intense heroin habit
right.
around this time. It was obviously slated to become a complete disaster, and yet somehow, through all the distractions and the chaos, music did emerge. Two albums worth, actually, a double album of music. Today we're going to look at the first of the two albums. We're going to play the first half of Exile on Main Street in its entirety. That sounds like a bit of an oxymoron when you say the first half in its entirety. But
they don't know you.
Well, keep in mind, this was from the days of vinyl, so it was a double album.
Right.
So we're playing sides one and two. Now, if you buy the album today, they fit the whole thing onto one CD. But it was controversial at the time when it came out because the Stones had not released a double album, and they were told, like the Beatles were told, like everybody gets told, double albums are commercial suicide. People don't buy them. They're too expensive. They're difficult to market. And like the Beatles' White Album, they both were a little bit slow out the gate in comparison to the rest of their catalog, but they also, again, like the Beatles, it became the album that some people say is their
quintessential.
Right, their best work, the thing that shows the best cross-section of the band, the most interesting. There are lots of different ways to look at it. Exile certainly falls into that category for the Stones, not only because of the fact that it was a double album, but the fact that they kind of let down some of the pretense that they were maintaining for their earlier albums. Of the bad boy thing and about trying to write lyrics that were going to be deliberately provocative.
Right.
Seems to go away here to some extent. It was a little bit more about just being themselves and how things fell together. So let's get right to it. Let's start the album off with track one, side one. Here's the Rolling Stones with Rocks Off.
Come on.
Is that any way to start an album?
I thought you were going to play two.
Oh, I figured I'd come back because I can talk a little bit about the next track. But I love that as an opening track. That should have been a single. But it's one of the best album openers that the Stones ever recorded, I feel. It gives you the sense that this is going to be a classic album. Now, I'm going to read a couple of excerpts for some of the tracks, not for all of them, from Keith Richards' book called Life, as he talks a little bit about the sessions on this album. The next track, called Rip This Joint, he discusses a little bit as follows. Most of what I had to do is come up with riffs and ideas that would turn Mick on, to write songs he could handle. They had to be good records, but translatable to being played on stage. I was the butcher, cutting the meat, and sometimes he didn't like it. He didn't like Rip This Joint. It was too fast. I think we might have popped it once since then, but Rip This Joint in terms of beats per minute is something like a world record. Maybe Little Richard had done something faster, but in any case, nobody was looking to beat the world record. So in other words, this is one of those great rock and roll songs, and I never really thought about how fast it was, but it's absolutely raucous. It is raucous, and it's pretty awesome. Here's the Stones with Rip This Joint.
Let me just shake body. Booty shake body. Shake your hip body. Shake your hip body. Well, you don't know. Don't be no afraid. Just listen to me. This what I say. Don't move your head. Don't move your hand. Don't move your lips. Just shake your hip. Do the hip shake body. Do the hip shake body. Shake your hip body. Shake your hip body.
I remember when this track came out, or when I had heard it the first time, I always confused the beginning of it with that ZZ Top track, LaGrange.
Oh, yeah, I guess it's got that sort of same sort of riff.
Almost identical. It's got the exact same. Like,
well, it's a classic blues thing, isn't it?
Well, so. You got that, like the sticks on the rim, which, you know, the percussion is identical in the beginning. And the guitar riff, I'm not a guitarist, but that sounds like it's identical as well. They make a great segue, I'll tell you that, playing them back to back. Now, if you take Keith Richards, you know, side of the story, although things were a complete mess, and he's a bit contradictory about it too, he'll talk about, like, not having any ideas, and then more or less just walking in and acting as though he knew exactly what he was doing, even though he very often didn't, because he was almost trying to basically fool the other musicians into having this sense of, like, cocky confidence about where they were headed, to try to get the most out of them. But the truth is, he would even say there were plenty of times and he would just run out of ideas. And then he would say, let me think about that. Then he'd say, I've got to go upstairs and put Marlon to bed. And what he would really do is he'd go off, you know, probably shoot up, stay gone for about 2 or 3 hours. Then he'd, somewhere in that time period, he'd maybe have a flash of a thought that he might be a good idea. Then he'd come back down to recruit everybody to pick up where they left off. But everybody in that all that time would be standing around for 3 hours waiting for Keith.
Right.
And yet Keith says that the sessions were incredibly prolific. Oh, well, you know, prolific if you're a heroin junkie, you know? Because if you're a junkie, I mean, things happen on your schedule.
Time just seems to go by so quickly.
he did say that there were times, and he said, you know, he felt like he really wanted to basically, what's wrong with all these people and who need sleep? You know, why do they need sleep? He'd be up for 3 or 4 days at a time, just on a total run. Or as he remembers it, that was
right,
the case.
Right, as he remembers it.
Exactly. Now, although even he does admit from time to time that, you know, there were difficult periods. Again, reading straight from the book, we did dry up. Casino Boogie came out of when Mick and I had just about run ourselves ragged. Mick's looking at me, and I go, I don't know. And it came to my mind the old Bill Burroughs cut-up method. Let's rip headlines out of newspapers and pages out of a book and throw them on the floor and see what comes up.
Oh, boy.
Hey, we're obviously in no mood to write a song in the usual fashion, so let's use somebody else's method. And it worked on Casino Boogie. I'm surprised we haven't used it since, quite honestly. But at the time, it was desperation. One phrase bounces off another, and suddenly it makes sense, even though they're totally disconnected. But they have the same feel about them, which is a fair definition of writing a rock or a pop song lyric anyway. The lyrics, in case you've never listened to them before, he's got them printed here. So these are the words to Casino Boogie. Grotesque music, $1 million sad. Got no tactics, got no time on hand. Left shoe shuffle, right shoe muffle, sinking in the sand. Fade out freedom, steaming heat on. Watch that hat in black, finger twitching. Got no time on hand. What? All right, here's Casino Boogie.
No good can't speak. Wind up, no sleep. Skydive inside. Slip rope, stunt fly. Wounded lover, got no time on hand.
There's one of those one-chord workouts that actually made the album. We played a few of those,
yeah.
If you'll recall.
Well, it works.
Last week. The ones we played last week weren't quite as good. That one had a good feel. That's a good groove on that. That's Casino Boogie. We're playing side one right now from the album Exile on Main Street by the Stones. We've got one track left to play, and it happens to be the one that became the hit single, the song that was extracted from the album. Now, we played an earlier version of that last week. We played, as it was written, it was a song called Good Time Woman. In fact, Keith talks about that in his book as well, and about writing it. It's kind of interesting, so I'll cover this. Tumbling Dice may have had something to do with the gambling den that Nelcote turned into. There were card games and roulette wheels. Monte Carlo was around the corner. Bobby Keys and some of the cats did go down there once or twice. We did play dice. I credit Mick with Tumbling Dice, but the song had to make the transition from its earlier form, which was a song called Good Time Woman. That's the song that we played last week.
Mm-hmm.
You might have all of the music, a great riff, but sometimes the subject matter is missing. It only takes one guy sitting around a room saying, throwing craps last night, for a song to be born. Got to roll me. Songs are strange things. Little notes like that, if they stick, they stick. With most of the songs I've written, quite honestly, I felt there's an enormous gap here waiting to be filled. This song should have been written hundreds of years ago. How did nobody pick up on that little space? Half of the time you're looking for gaps that other people haven't done, and you say, I don't believe they missed that hole. It's so obvious. It was there staring you in the face. I pick out the holes. Which is rather true, because on this song, as you heard it last week, it was serviceable, but it wasn't a hit. This is one of those songs which did not just fall together like a jam. This is one of the songs that Keith belabored over, especially the intro guitar part. He said that he actually spent a couple of days playing with his tuning, playing with his fingering to see what he was going to come up with. Came up, so as some songs, like he says, just seemed to fall out of the sky and hit him in the head, others required a little bit of work and fine-tuning. This is the one that required fine-tuning. And yet it's funny that after they did all of that, they still managed to bury the vocal. It's very hard to understand Mick Jagger on this track. Here's Tumbling Dice.
1972. Yeah.
got two different reviews that I want to read excerpts from regarding that song.
Okay.
The first one is from the Illustrated Rock and Roll, the Illustrated Rolling Stones book that I've been reading from time to time for the reviews. Their review reads thusly. With 18 tracks at their disposal, the Stones were in a predicament as to what they should issue as their first single in 12 months. For a period, All Down the Line was the prime contender, being superseded by Tumbling Dice. However, All Down the Line was chosen as the stateside follow-up, although I remember Happy being the stateside follow-up. Anyway, lyrically, Tumbling Dice is quite superb, but the off-the-cuff casualness with which the Stones nonchalantly doled out this dosage of midstream R&B raunch gave it the illusion of being something of a throwaway. If anything, the Stones slightly underestimated themselves, and though Tumbling Dice slips into focus with successive replays, not too many people bothered to verify this fact. Nevertheless, with Mick Taylor on bass and Mick Jagger handling one of the guitars, it glided into the top five placings, although not in America. In America, it went to number seven. Still, not so bad. Now, in my own book, American Air Radio, I wrote about this as well. I won't read the whole excerpt, but I'll read basically the last two paragraphs.
Okay, a highlight.
With the momentum of a freight train, the rhythm chugs along under the force of its own weight, while Jagger yells incoherently over the din. The track is so loud and forceful, and the vocals are mixed down so low that only a few phrases emerge audibly. Although the dense and muddled production originally left most listeners confused or indifferent, it has since emerged as a classic, perhaps the last truly great Rolling Stones 45. So why, I must ask, did Linda Ronstadt see fit to cover this song? Her versions of Smokey Robinson or Chuck Berry tunes also left something to be desired, despite her vocal chops, but none are as bothersome as her version of Tumbling Dice. One of the main reasons that this song appealed to me in the first place is because I could ignore Jagger's apparently deliberate string of rhetoric and platitudes and groove on the charm of hearing a drug-addled gospel group testify incoherently. With all the words slurred and jumbled, it's easy to keep this perception and rock out on another classic Stones groove. Covering Tumbling Dice was akin to spoiling one of life's riddles, exposing it only to find it barren. It was the ultimate disservice, and I can't help but hold a grudge. Her version was both improbable and unnecessary, like listening to Jerry Vale sing Brown Sugar or Dean Martin croon Mother's Little Helper. The world didn't need more than one version of Tumbling Dice, and the Stones built the original to last. Sorry, Linda, take that. That, by the way, was, Linda's version was in the film FM, and she also had a top 40 hit with it a few years later, about 78 maybe, in the 28, something like that, number 28, something like that.
32.
Top 40, nevertheless. All's forgiven now, Linda. I hope you're well, by the way. I hear she's having trouble. She's suffering a bit, so I shouldn't
be
taking it
easy on her.
Exactly. So let's go to side two, another song. This is called Sweet Virginia, a song that I believe, around this point in time, I'm not sure if it's deliberate or not, but there used to be a nickname that they had for really bad heroin. If you understand that Keith was used to taking professional grade, government
grade. Yeah, like methadone and stuff.
Well, real pure heroin, because the government in England, it was weird, but the government would literally supply you with heroin
if you were a
registered junkie. And you'd get good, clear, literally, spotlessly pure, excellent heroin. Cut just the right way. Now, in America, when he was hanging out with Graham Parsons, they were getting Mexican heroin, which was brown and tar-like, the type of stuff, you put that in your vein, you're taking huge risk. They called it shoe scrapings. So maybe that has something to do with some of the lyrical references in this track. Anyway, here's Sweet Virginia.
Thank you.
That track. I always figured that's one of the sleeper songs on the album that gets overlooked. Great guitar work on that.
Yeah, it's pretty.
And it's actually, it's pedal steel. And that's Al Perkins playing the pedal steel. Al Perkins, let's see, who I know as, from here he must have gone on to join the band Manassas with Stephen Stills.
Oh, yeah.
He was the pedal steel player in that band. And it's easy to forget that Stephen Stills was living in England around this point in time. Might have something to do with the connection there and how that was made. Although, like I said, this
is a small world, though, in terms of musicians.
Oh, yeah, no doubt. I mean, obviously, with the Graham Parsons connection as well, a lot of players are coming through that connection. I would imagine that Al Perkins might have had some tie-in there as well. You're listening to American Hit Radio on WHPC 90.3 FM. Heidi Morales and Tom Ryan here. We do this every Wednesday and Friday between 5 and 6 p.m. On Wednesdays, the show's simply called American Hit Radio. Friday, we switch it around to How Music Changed, where we do our countdowns and stuff like this. If you're interested in the show, if you're or a specific series that we've done, you can check out our website where we post all of these shows. They're all available on the internet. Just search for the show name, American Hit Radio. We should come straight up. Otherwise, if you want to type in the URL, if you're one of the exacting types, you can just go to AmericanHitNetwork.com and you'll see our website come straight up. Our Wednesday show is on the homepage on the left-hand side. You'll see all the most recent shows looking right at you. And there's a See All Shows button. And if you hit that, boy, you just opened up a whole
Pandora's box.
Because there's about 400 or 500 shows that are underneath there that keep going and going and going all the way back. The same thing with the right side of the page, which will be like today's show and the other shows that precede it. As I said earlier, this is show number 28 in our series dedicated to the Rolling Stones. The 27 shows that precede this show our pace. I don't know if we got 27 up yet, to be honest, because my partner has been on vacation, but we will get it up. But the other 26 are certainly there. If you'd like to do some catching up or fill in on some of the aspects of the Stones' career that you're most focused on or interested in, you can do exactly that. Choose the show that you want to and get some history, or play through the whole thing and basically get the entire Rolling Stones story.
All.
It only takes 24 hours of your life to do it. Why not? So there it is, just in case.
So quickly.
Well, with this show, number 28, as I said earlier, we are playing through the entire first half of Exile on Main Street on vinyl. That means sides one and side two from the album. We played the hit single that was called from the album, Tumbling Dice. Every single, every 45 RPM single has a B-side. The B-side in this case was a song called Sweet Black Angel. Nobody quite knew at
who
the
that
time,
might be.
So who it might be. But this review figures the acoustic guitars are strummed and percussion programmed to a tropical calypso rhythm as Jagger eclectically extols support for Angela Davis, the woman who was representative of the Black Panthers around this time.
Uh-huh.
So there you go. Here's Sweet Black Angel.
Counting up your minutes, counting up your days. She's a sweet black angel, whoa. Not a sweet black skin. Thank you.
Sweet Black Angel from the album Exile on Main Street. We will be back next week, by the way, also by playing the entire second half of the album, which is just as good as the first half. Obviously, this is pretty strong. You see why this album has basically got legs now. I mean, here it is. Boy, the 40th anniversary came and went, and the album still sounds really strong, really fresh. If this came out today, it would be the best Rolling Stones album in 40 years. You know, no doubt.
Well, it's better than some of the stuff they came out with later.
Yeah, well, we'll be covering a lot of that as well as we move, you know, forward through the Rolling Stones history. I intend to cover something from every album, all of the good bits, every single, certainly. And the ones that I skip, I'll mention the ones that I'm skipping and why. I'll have to be a little bit opinionated.
Yes.
At points
in
time.
Be careful. Be gentle.
But I think that some of the listeners will be glad that I am. As we move forward, because I don't want to do the Rolling Stones show number 128 or 129.
You don't?
That might be a bit much.
I think some people in the studio might be glad of that.
So we'll try to keep it somewhat under wraps as we keep going for it.
Already.
Yeah. It might feel as though we're there already, but this is only number 28.
Only.
Here's another excerpt from Keith's book, Life, about the sessions. Okay. Maybe I would crash out if I crashed out at all around 10 in the morning, then get up around 4 in the afternoon, subject to the usual variations. Nobody's going to arrive until sunset anyway. So then I had a couple of hours to think about or play back what we did last night so I could pick it up where we left off. Or if we had it already, it was a matter of what to do when the guys arrived a little later. And you sometimes start to panic when you realize you have nothing to offer them. It's always that feeling when these guys are expecting material as if it comes from the gods, whereas the reality is it comes from Mick or me. When you see the documentary on Exile, it gives an impression of jamming away spontaneously for hours in the bunker until we've got something, until we're ready for a take, as if we're trusting to incoming from the ether. That's the way it's been portrayed, and some of it might have happened that way, but ask Mick. So like I said, there's two perspectives there. There's that from, you know, pretty much the boss junkie who really was being incredibly creative, and obviously the album proves it. Keith was able to work through his habit, no doubt. But it wasn't a straightforward, clean work process, that's for sure.
No.
Well, we've got one song left to end side one. We'll play this now to leave you. And I hope you can join us again actually next Wednesday, as we bring you another edition of American Hit Radio. And then, of course, as I said, next Friday for show number 29, as we play Exile on Main Street, part two. So here's the last track then on the first half of the album. Here's the Rolling Stones with Loving Cup. Have a great weekend, everybody. We'll see you then. I know my